Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. It's good to have you on board again. And once again, I'm joined by our resident shaman, Heather Heaton. Hello, Heather.
Hi, Aunt. Nice to be back.
Thank you very much. So today is what we're talking about is part two of our serialization of the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy. So I'll hand you over to Heather.
Well, the Celestine Prophecies, just for a recap, as we've already done one episode on it, so I will say that the Celestine Prophecies are a system of teaching that enables people to transcend from the everyday social human experience of life to that of becoming a higher consciousness of being. I hope that's not too much of a mouthful,
Well,
Ant.
I'm sure it will become there'll be a deeper understanding for our listeners as we go through the different insights. I'm looking forward to that. Just to add a footnote to our listeners, if you wish to know more about the author James Redfield and how he came to the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy and actually the story of its publication, then please do listen to our introductory episode where we go into more depth about the background of the teachings. And then we go on to talk about the first and second insight. So that will be an interesting listen if you want more of a background. And also, just to add another footnote, if you do go on to practice the teachings, or if you are trying to implement them in your life in any way, it's important that they are followed in sequence in order for you to take on fully the integration. I'm sure you would back that up, Heather.
Yeah, the integration of the skills,
Yeah, integration
really
of skills.
important. I'm just going to do a quick recap, and
Please.
for our listeners, for everybody out there listening, of the first and second insights for a
Okay.
quick catch up.
Thank you.
The first insight is how to notice and recognize synchronicities. And that by everybody, ideally speaking, should we say, if a majority of the members of the public
Yeah.
were noticing the synchronicities and understood them and believed with them and found them going really well in their lives, so that they were forms of guidance for forms of information and understanding, then it will transpire to a complete a cultural transfiguration or transformation.
Okay. And is that the second insight, or is that?
That's the first
All right.
insight. It
Okay.
re that it really ha will have it's like a wave action going through society
Right.
and enabling society just to fully accept that
That's
there
the
is
new
this
norm.
obs yes, this is the observation that
Yeah.
you do take notice of.
Yeah.
Then the second insight to follow through indicates how important it is to review history to understand who you are, where you are, and where society is in the pattern of
So
things.
is that the thinking, Heather, just to reiterate for our listeners that we can't understand where culture is going unless we understand where we've come from, kind of thing, so we can track that progression, kind of
Yeah,
thing.
the real understanding from the second insight is for all humans, all of us at the present, here and now, wherever, whenever the here and now is, to understand that we're in a rolling stage, rolling stages, or a rolling pattern of existence, of life and evolution. And it does suggest in the book that we go back, I think it's 1,000 years in history, and then sort of roll through it very fast and come forward with it very fast, as if you are living all of the major bits of incidents and history of
So all
cultural
the shifts and
change.
changes,
Yeah. And then you are a part of it, and you're a part of where it's come from, and therefore you sort of then are able to flow forward with it from where it actually is, rather than it being
And
oblivious.
I believe in the episode we actually touched upon how you can do that as part of a meditation process, didn't we? Where you can literally sort of track all that
Yeah,
change.
we did suggest that people sit down after reviewing history, going on the internet and reviewing major society and cultural changes. Events and changes
yeah.
back 1,000 years, sort of squash them all together, fast forward through them, like in a sort of semi-meditation or a meditation, and see yourself as part of it, that you've experienced it as you go through.
So embodying the changes in yourself.
Kind of. It is quite amazing when you do that, Ant. That's what we found, and I think you've been through some of that, and you found that as well. It is quite amazing when you suddenly realise the bigger picture that you hadn't seen before. And it really is about seeing the bigger picture. So that's...
okay.
That's insights 1 and 2 for a quick catch up.
Okay, I think we'll move on now to start our discussion on the third insight.
Well, I'm going to ask people to start off with, and it's in our bio, isn't it?
Yes.
The question is, are you able to see subtle energies?
Intriguing.
That's the question to the third insight. It's a matter of energy.
Right.
So the energy is seeing a field of energy. Mm-hmm. Now, people who have developed are able to see energies that those who haven't gone through that developing process are unable to see. So I think a lot of people actually would like to see those energies, don't you think?
I do, yes.
So
I've had brief glimpses myself of auras sometimes, and it's a really interesting process when you do actually see it. Yeah,
it's not an easy thing to do, and not everybody sees the energies of aura. So lucky you.
I know. I believe there is an experiment. Is that right? That people can do in order to help them see the aura with the thing where you can use your fingertips.
Well, I was going to come on to that later, I shall bring that. But
please do.
There's more than one of these things to be a one of these things. One of them is, if you remember the old 3D pictures that we used to see. What do we call them? The magical eye, or
where
pictures go into 3D.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if anybody's seen them in modern. These modern or this more recent decade or two, but there was quite a lot of them out on the market once upon a time. But it does help to exercise your eyes for being able to see more energy vibrations, shall we say. And of course, that is seeing the fields of energy. What I wanted to say was that for people to be able to see the aura like you, and not everybody can see that even if they practice, but they can always see the etheric layer that sits around the edge of the body, follows around the edge of the body, and it can be sort of like a golden light, like a slight yellow light, or it can be a slight blue light. I don't know if we've spoken about that before, but I don't think we have on the Celestine prophecies.
No.
Have you been able to see that yourself, Ant?
On a few occasions, but only very fleetingly. It's because once the kind of the rational brain kicks in, you lose it. You almost need to turn off the thinking brain, because that's not helpful in those moments.
Yeah, it takes practice.
It does, yeah.
It does take practice. Also, you can see sort of the same glow around edges of plants and things.
Yeah.
But it's quite an easy thing to do. It takes a bit of practice and dedication. But you can do it. I'll come to the finger, later on, the other part of the third insight is to attain a deeper appreciation of beauty. It's an important development, and therefore I will come across that shortly. I'll come back to about energy.
Please.
Quantum mechanics is where we're going on this.
Okay.
I'm going to start a little way back and say that the role of science has been to, since the modern science has been developed, has been to remove uncertainty. So it's focused entirely on what can be proven in the solid world. You understand about that, don't you? So it's what can be proven What can be proven and what can be solid, for instance, and
quantified,
and you're talking about rock and you're talking about earth and you're talking all about all of those things. They have done a very, very good job in coming to the trouble is that they sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater. And what they did throw out was the other side of existence.
Well, the spiritual dimension, but you can understand because...
Well, the subtle.
Yeah.
The subtle energy, sure. I'd say, rather than the spiritual. I know we link spiritual to subtle.
Yeah.
And yes, really, in a way, there is a link. I would totally go with that. But it's the subtle energies that have been dismissed, shall we say, as we see it, from the science world. Because, as you say, it can't be quantified, it couldn't be measured, and it wasn't like solid, like rock.
Can I ask, what exactly do you mean by subtle energies?
What do I mean by subtle energies? Okay. If you were to feel... Well, I think a subtle one I could say... was that if I'm going to go to the spiritual now, if a spirit sort of came into the zone that you were sitting in, like in the room, would you notice the change of energy? That's a subtle energy.
So you mean like you might feel a coldness or a dampness or something in something, a shift or a change, and that could indicate the presence of a spirit or some sort of...
And of course there are others as well, but with also the type of thing, I think you know something about this, is the observer effect.
I do, yes.
The observer effect. Can you explain what that is? Because I think you know...
Yeah, this is a well-known experiment that was carried out by a Japanese author and researcher called Masaru Emoto. That's Emoto. And what he basically discovered was the effect that human consciousness can have on the molecular structure of water. So he had two sort of containers full of water, one of which was labelled with love and one of which was hate or fear, one of the two, I'm not quite sure which. But basically, the one that was containing... that was labelled love, it formed these very intricate, complex, beautiful crystal-like structures, okay, when it froze on the surface. The one that was labelled love or, hate or fear, they were non-geometric shapes. It was quite sort of, for want of a better phrase, ugly sort of formations. And it is said that with the observer effect, obviously, that the emotions of the observer are affecting the very molecular structure, in this case, of the water. So, I mean, that shows the power that we have as individuals, if you think about it, on our immediate environment, on a molecular level, which is quite amazing, really, when you think of the effect that our emotions can have on something that people would consider, you know, a mundane thing like water. I mean, it's incredible that it goes that deep, isn't it?
And of course, what you're alluding to is quantum mechanics.
Yeah, nice link.
Which, smooth. But quantum mechanics is what scientists finally came to, a big breakthrough in understanding after splitting the atom.
Yeah.
After believing that the atom was the smallest particle of the building blocks of the universe. And of course, the two scientists whose names I can't remember, I have to admit, did experiments that managed to split the atom. So we had particles, atom particles.
Yeah.
And what those two scientists who went on to explore was the concentration upon those atom particles depended upon the actions that took place depended upon their mood, their expectations, whether they were having, by mood I mean their bad day, their good day, their expectations of what they thought they were going to do and what they weren't going to do affected what happened to the atom particles, even to the effect that the particles were doing things that previously, going by the laws of physics understood earlier,
up to that point,
yeah, were apparently impossible. For instance, how can you have one particle being two places at the same time?
Sure.
Which is what they discovered.
Sure. So it fried a few brains.
Well, yes, it did. But you see, you know, what you've just described as the observer effect is what we would say is explained by quantum effect. Mechanics, yes, was explained by that.
So if listeners are interested in hearing more about this, we discuss on an episode called The Science of the Spiritual. One of my fellow guests, Mike, we discuss that, so you might want to check out that episode. We go into the science a lot more, which is very interesting.
Absolutely, thank you for that. And that can help anybody who wants to go into it a bit more, because it is a fascinating area. So if we're looking at, there's a phrase that's bandying around now, which I absolutely love. It's called where energy flows, where attention goes. This is the alternative's way of saying what you concentrate on, where you put your attention, and what energy and thought you put into it, so you create. And this is also obviously connected to manifestation.
Of course.
And the understanding of manifestation is what everybody wants to be aware of, what everybody wants to understand, so that maybe they can produce effects within their lives, maybe help them make decisions, maybe enable people to get past problems, or enabling them to go further and be more creative in their lives and the stages in their lives. But within that, I would really like to stress that if anybody is working on manifestation, please take responsibility for what happens. It is also known as try to manifest on the superficial level of life can sometimes
bite you on the bum a bit.
Yes, I was going to be more delicate, but yeah. Thank you. That's maybe
so. I mean, what the Celestine teachings, if I'm right, Heather, in essence, is about is whereby as individuals we are manifesting to take the whole of humanity forward rather than our own individual needs and wants in the material world. I'm not saying that they're not important. Of course they are. We need homes, we need cars, we need transportation. But the teachings of the Celestine prophecy are about looking in terms of a more evolved approach towards manifestation.
Yeah, and I'll emphasise what you have just said. The more evolved approach is about going forward as a community, as a group. And I know the Native Americans call human beings the one village.
Yeah.
So it's about everybody moving forward together and helping everybody move together. Whereas sometimes in manifestation, if we think about it being in a superficial way, it can often be used to try and amass, desired stuff that may not be that relevant, rather than how we can make the universe go forward.
I believe I'm right in thinking that we're not going to go into manifestation too much more at this point, though, are we?
Well, I just wanted to go on. Remember you were saying about that exercise with the two fingers?
Yeah.
I think that I'm just going to describe it now if anybody wants to have a go, if not done it before. It is a known exercise.
Yes.
But to be able to see energies, to be able to be able to see the energies in a quite an easy way, shall I say.
Okay,
easy way is to put your two palms facing you in front of you and your two index fingers together.
Yeah.
Make them touching at the points.
Yeah.
The two index fingers.
Yeah.
And then as you are gradually and very slowly drawing them apart, phase out your focus.
Yeah.
Phase out your focus.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's called look through your eyelashes.
Okay.
Look through your eyelashes, or sometimes even if you actually do cross-eyed. That's quite helpful. But sure. If you do that, or just scrunch your eyes up so it's got your eye, I mean, slightly starts out going focus. A bit misty.
Yeah.
And very, very slowly pull your hands apart, looking between those two fingers.
Yeah.
And you might start seeing something that's a little bit different. Well, apparently a bit smoky. Mm. But as sort of fibrous, as some sort of joining threads, could be a bit bluish. But I think you have to see for yourself, but you might find that it might be even like that heat haze.
Yeah.
You know, the heat haze that we can see sometimes. So have a go with that and you'll begin to see. The more you practice that, the more you might be able to see.
I know it might be helpful for our listeners just to pass on this information, but myself, I found it helpful to do that on a white background, so maybe against a white wall, because you can see the sort of smoky effect, hazy effect between the two fingers a lot easier. That's what I find. I mean, it might be different for other people, but that's what I find against a white background.
Can you see that quite well?
Yeah.
I can imagine if you can see some aura from time to time, you would be able to see that quite easily. Sure. Good, brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic. Do, though, see if you can get hold of some 3D pictures to practice also, and put a plant in a window to see the light of the window behind,
the shimmering.
And then practice that, and you will be able to see more and more and more. And it's very satisfying to do that.
And, of course, trees, when you go to forests and woods, you can...
There's a load of energy that you will find if you go up a steep hill or up a mountain, and there seems to be some rise in energy that naturally goes up, and it draws up a hill. But of course, you get that same effect up trees.
Mm.
The trees, it draws energy up. Mm. So you can sit under a tree, you can look at a tree from a distance. You can feel the energy, or go up a mountain and you'll feel a different energy. Also, the more subtle energies that you get to be in tune with, the more you can tune into like ley lines, energy lines, sacred ground sometimes, ancient forests, nature areas where the land has not changed.
It tends to be areas where there aren't many human beings.
Yes.
Contaminating the space.
Until we go looking until for the energies and trample over it.
It becomes a bit self-defeating, yeah.
Again, that's a good idea. It's actually a rather nice thing to do, is to actually be very respectful where you go.
Yeah.
Don't pollute. Mm. And do ask the spirits there, is it okay if I come and investigate? Just ask. If you've never done it before and you don't know how to, just ask. And just watch and listen for a sign that says either negative or positive. Mm. And that's always a wise thing to do in these situations.
Do you know of any researcher or, you know, author or who's a particular expert in terms of ley lines and understanding energies and the importance of, you know, how we can integrate them into our lives?
I do know of Peter Knight, who is, what county is he in?
He's in Wiltshire.
Down in Wiltshire. And Stone Seeker.
Right.
Stone Seeker is his website.
Okay.
Anybody want to learn more about tuning into energy, especially of the land, his books, his workshops, I think would be a really good thing to go for.
Mm. And of course
his talks and his lectures are really good.
We hope to have him on a future episode as well, so watch his space.
Yeah, we're chasing him at the moment.
And I believe another person who you've been on his workshops is Patrick McManaway.
Patrick does the most amazing year course, Buckinghamshire.
Mm-hmm. Here in the UK, for our foreign listeners.
Yeah, so here in the UK.
You might have to travel a bit from Canada, the States, or Australia.
Yes, all of this is the UK, unless we otherwise state, I think.
Yeah.
He does the most amazing course. It's a 3-part course, 3 weekends over a year. And on one of the weekends, he goes into Tuning into the energy lines on the earth,
yeah,
and tuning into energies coming from underneath the earth,
mm-hmm.
In amazing detail and fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I can highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
I can highly recommend his course.
Okay.
Loads and loads of information, incredible expert information. And so if that's somebody's want, just look up. I can't remember his website, but you can contact him.
Just Google
him.
His name, it will bring up.
Oh,
anything.
You Google his name, yeah. It'll bring it up. I know, yeah. Patrick McManaway, that is. So you've got those going on. I'm just going to add before we move on to the next bit,
yeah,
is that I want people, I don't know how much people know, but I think my fairly clued in these days, mostly, that scientists have now, due to looking at quantum physics,
yeah,
etc., that they know that everything solid is not solid. Everything has space in it, lots and lots of
so
space.
Does that mean even solid things are
energy.
Waveforms or yeah?
Yeah, everything's energy. In fact, in the human body, there's more space than there is solid.
Yeah.
With everything, and so everything's energy, and the whole of this third insight is bringing our attention to energies, and the importance of energies, and how we really need to improve upon our ordinary energies, so our physical three-dimensional energies, as well as our more subtle energies. To help those improve.
So do you know, obviously, we're talking about energies, and I know in the spiritual alternative field, they're spoken about a lot, and I struggle, being quite an intelligent person, to actually really integrate it or understand what it means. So I wonder if you could tell us, our listeners, how do they go about raising their energies? You know, this insight is about energies and understanding energies, but how do people actually go about doing that in an everyday way, moving beyond like me having this sort of intellectual understanding of energies, and there's all these books and all this fascinating information online, but it's actually how can I use the understanding to transform my life? And that's why we're doing the Celestine Prophecies in this way, to try and help people integrate the teachings so they can transform their life.
It's recommended that a person, number one, looks at their nutrition intake.
Yeah.
So the type of food and drink that you take in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's often thought that the more organic and simplistic and nutritious the food is and less manufactured, the more that's going to affect your energy, your vibrations, your energy system. So your physical energy system, and then on into the meridian system, and then your more subtle energies, which we think of as your chakras and therefore your aura system.
When people take in food, obviously, of higher energy, then that sort of radiates out. Is that correct?
Or shall we say pure and basic?
Yeah.
Pure and basic energies.
Unadulterated.
And yes, if you're thinking about higher energy food, then that makes sense, doesn't it? But what is higher energy food? Well, I'm not an expert on the foods, and there are many people out there in the world that are.
Yeah.
In everybody's locality, there are many people that have quite an insight on it. But I always say, simplistically, it's how it's grown and how it's produced.
Yeah.
How it comes to our table.
And as we know, a lot of the food from the supermarkets, not only is it sprayed, irradiated, it's we all know through internet research that a lot of our food is very, the nutrition is very much depleted, but that's a discussion for another day.
Yes, but that's a general understanding in a lot of circles about nutrition, about food, and about energies that's understood. But this is what's taught in the Celestine Prophecies, to go through these stages to get to this latter point at the end of the teaching. So it's worth taking a bit of notice on and giving it a try, because how do you know till you try?
Okay.
Another way is, of course, we know good old meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But it is vital to balance the mind and quieten the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to center your mind.
Yeah.
very important to have those things going. So if you have those things going and you're going out to a very powerful part of the world or nature, and also sitting around nature is very important as well. Those types of things. Was that the sort of thing that you were asking?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Then there is another stage to go on to with the third insight, which is about beauty.
Right.
The interesting thing, or the connection between what we've just been talking about and beauty, is seeing beauty in everything.
So an appreciation for beauty, is that what
it is? An appreciation for beauty. Seeing all this beauty, appreciating beauty, is really, if you think about it, it's the cleansing of the mind and the emotions.
Sure, yeah.
So we've been talking about the energies of the body and the subtle bodies, the aura, and the subtle energies. This is the mind, the emotions, connecting with all of them.
Yeah.
And it's also seen... I was also seen as and understood as if you are eating nutritionally well with good basic food, good prepared food, and you are getting good exercise, you know, swimming or dancing or martial arts or anything, and meditation, it's seen that you're obviously that your mind, therefore, your emotions can improve.
Right.
With mind and emotions improved, it is possible to look at the world rather than from a miserable point of view. Because, of course, the more your body health is down, the harder it is to see the more positive side of what you're looking at.
So it's almost like when you're less contaminated by toxins, if you want to put it in those terms, and you're kind of purer, but not, I don't mean in a moral sense.
Purer sounds a bit...
It does, a bit Victorian.
Yes, it does.
I think our listeners know what I mean.
Yes.
You're a little bit purer. That enables you to see the truth, because really beauty is also about truth. Like you look into a flower head.
Yes.
It's about when you see the beauty of that, it's the truth, isn't it?
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
Is that a bit...
Well, no,
philosophical.
Well, it is a bit, except I know a lot of listeners out there would understand that. They would see the beauty in that. But I think a really important phrase here is a good old phrase again. I do like these phrases. In the eye of the beholder.
Yeah. And well, they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
There you go. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. and it does to have the exercise and to have the meditation, to have the nutritional food, and to be connecting with energies, it's understood that a huge change can come about where you can see colours and images differently. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
A good few years ago, there's a friend, a couple of friends I had, both very interested in the alternative, very interested in Reiki. They were healers. One was also a shamanically trained person like myself.
Yeah.
That was the wife. The husband and wife, they both went through detoxing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by, shall I explain detoxing?
Yeah, please, yeah.
The detoxing is to cleanse your body from all sorts of pollutants, shall we say, even the subtle pollutants like breathing in toxic air, from fumes from the air, but also, you know, any manufactured foods they'd been eating. Yeah. But they did do the detoxing process with a professional.
So it was managed. That's because it can be quite dangerous, can't it? If people are doing
very
it in an
so.
Unmanaged way, they can cause more problems.
Absolutely. And they would not dream of doing it any other way than being guided. Because I do know somebody else who went through a detox, a lady, she was on her own, and she became very, very ill very quickly.
Mm.
But she didn't get in touch with her guide, her detoxing guide, for 2 or 3 days. And when she did, the detoxing guide said, "My goodness, you should have kept in touch with me. That's what I'm here for."
Sure.
And she was very poorly with her detoxing.
Yeah.
This couple, just a few years ago, I always remember that after going through this detox, and they did it very well. They didn't get sick, but they did it very well. But it was following the detox and then balancing out with eating good food, good nutrition, but in a more normal way. I remember the husband saying to me, oh my goodness, you have no idea. You can't even imagine how bright colours are until you've detoxed.
Wow.
You cannot, it's a shock. It's a, it's an absolute delight. Even cars, even the cars, the colours are brighter. So nature's bright. And also they were very impressed with, they were seeing the energy vibrations, some energy vibrations coming off of plants.
Wow.
Because they detoxed. So cleanse body. And they were very used to meditating. They were both healers. They were both very used to meditating. So they were doing what they needed to do. And they were seeing. But without cleansing the body, they couldn't see all the energies they could
do. So does this mean then, Heather, that, you know, if we think about everyday life, the normal routine, the 9-to-5 grind, you know, work, rest, repeat, and that sort of level of everyday consciousness, really, it's actually not normal, because people's perceptions are, you know, are, as we were just talking about, are diminished.
You
know, we live in you know, quite toxic environment in terms of, as we've spoken about, the food we eat, the water we drink, the actual air we breathe because of fumes. But we all consider that, our perception that we have in that world, or our level of consciousness, to be quite normal, don't we? But your friends, through this detox, it's like, actually, that's anything but normal. Because what, now they're experiencing what really is normal. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. In fact, how the body can function, how the body can be on a completely upper level, shall we say, a step up, and function on that level. So much so that skills that you have, abilities that,
that
you have, laying, all sorts,
laying dormant before.
They will be dormant, or they will be, you'll be more numb to them, be numbed to them, because when your body has become, shall we say, more sluggish and more flat in its energy ability, you don't, you aren't able to notice those things anywhere near as well. It doesn't work as well. So these are one of the stages to go through when you're going through the Celestine Prophecy, so that you can take advantage to a heightened degree. So that's a good word, and it heightens everything that you are.
Yeah.
It heightens it.
Sure.
And it becomes, you know, really exciting.
So
exciting. You could even be very sensitive to the spirits in nature.
Of course.
Which most of us aren't anymore. And we aren't, because our bodies are tend to be a bit full of
contamination.
Sorts of, and I know it's traces, but we can be full of enough traces that aren't actually killing us.
No.
But the our sensitivities have become numbed.
I think conspiracy types would say they keep us well enough to, you know, push the levers. So push the buttons and pull the levers, you know, at work. So, but just to finalise my point, what I'd like to say about this idea that I was talking about before, in terms of normal levels of consciousness and what we consider as good health, is we don't have this example of, it's so few people, unless you live in these sort of evolved communities, wherever they might be, of people living with higher levels of awareness and perception, because we live in an environment where everyone's, you know, seem to be, their perception is quite diminished, and you know, people are often having colds, flus, taking painkillers. We consider that to be normal, but as we're saying,
it's comparison.
Exactly, we haven't got the good comparison.
Well, we have the comparison with the next person next door,
who's got the same,
that gives us a sense of normalcy.
Sure,
doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That was so. We do comparisons. Okay, that's happening there, that's happening there, that's happening there. So if they're all like that, then I must be normal.
Then I'm okay,
Then it's okay. Mm. It's not a problem. But that is a misconception of human nature that we can draw from examples from what is normal and what isn't normal.
Yeah. Gosh, that's an episode all in itself.
Yes, I'm
perceptions of normality.
I'm thinking about an experiment that was ran in one of the universities in in Richmond, I think it was, in America.
Right.
During a holiday break,
mm-hmm.
where they had what, like the captors and the prisoners.
Okay.
Do you remember that
yeah.
experiment? And I can't, but you know, normal became bullying.
Mm.
And it was only when videos were played back showing the people who took part that those who became bullies were horrified at what they'd done, because it became normal.
Is that the Stockholm syndrome that you might be talking about?
Stockholm
syndrome, yeah.
I'm not sure about that. I think
okay.
that's something that you could tell us about sometime. Okay. Could you? That sounds quite interesting, whatever it is. Yes, but I'm going to now jump to what you
Please
were saying
do.
About
yeah.
health, that it is also understood that to have that level of health, shall we say, and well-being, that it increases your immunity against viruses and infections.
Yeah.
There is a belief that this is true. Who knows? I think everybody has to make up their own mind on that one. This is true. Okay. I would like to add, in the name of beauty, can I just emphasise that to the healthier and the more energetic you feel, the more you do see not only the colours being sharper, the colours being more beautiful in everywhere around you in your environment, but you also feel more positive about things.
Yeah.
So you will see the beauty in things
sure.
that you wouldn't normally.
Yeah.
But when we look at this and we talk these subjects, we're always talking about sort of nature and beautiful colours and
yeah.
various, shall I say, artistic
yeah.
Or artistic or gentle things. I want to add the beauty in our world. I want to expand looking at the beauty in our world that much more, not just looking at sunsets, not looking at beautiful views on a beautiful island or something and beaches, or beautiful film stars or something. I want us to look at the amazing creations that human beings have developed in the world that aren't usually thought of in
sure.
this vein.
So you're talking about, you know, engineering feats, the amazing
yes.
viaducts and bridges, or going back to the Victorian era and, you know, the introduction of steam engines. These are, I agree.
Oh, the construction of steam engines, amazing.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we were talking about classic
yeah.
cars and vintage
yeah.
cars?
Yeah.
They're absolutely
the
beautiful
and
they are man-made. These
yeah.
things are man-made, but there's beauty in them.
Sure.
And I think it's really... I think of, like, who would think of canals as beautiful until you walk along them
absolutely.
In the autumn?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
And all the viaducts, of course, you know.
Absolutely, yes,
and, yeah.
yeah. And sometimes road constructions can be
sure.
really beautiful.
Absolutely.
We've got loads of bridges examples and towers.
Yeah.
Castles,
yeah,
absolutely
cathedrals,
beautiful. Cathedrals,
yeah.
Beautiful.
I think there is a tendency in the New Age spiritual alternative world to, you know, because we look at the creation of man in terms of the awful things like war and the machinery of war, to discount what you're talking about.
I mean, we
discount that, and that's wrong.
Yeah,
because man can create the most amazing things, and a lot of them mean we can live in this, you know, privileged lifestyle in the West. It means we can record and put things out on the internet. And we all know, yes, that there is still a slave infrastructure that makes it possible for us to live like this in the West.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
I have to admit, I love my phone, my new phone.
Our convenience comes...
I think it's beautiful.
Our convenience does come a heavy cost to a lot of people in the world, unfortunately.
Yes. We wouldn't be reaching everybody and having any great discussions with people beyond the room that we're sat in now in this format if it weren't for technology.
Sure.
So there's negatives and positives and everything.
Yeah.
This system is saying, don't forget the beauty in things that you forget actually have a beautiful side to them and a beautiful purpose or whatever that is. Yes, absolutely. This is for sure. I'm just looking at my notes here. I want to talk about this energy in a way where we can tap into the universal source for energy.
Okay.
Because we're moving towards the fourth insight now to discuss.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah. The energy that we're I'm talking about now is a human energy system.
Yeah.
The human energy system. We've talked about how to raise your energies.
Yeah.
But this is talking about filling up with energy, right. But universal energy. It's unlimited, totally unlimited. You can draw from any amount and it will never ever run out or run dry. It's all about using that energy to give rather than take, because the fourth insight is a struggle for power, and it really is talking about an exchange of energy.
Okay, and I believe you have an interesting question to pose.
I do. Thank you for prompting
me.
Please
run it by us all.
I'm asking everybody the question, do you wonder why a good relationship can turn sour?
I do. I'm sure our listeners do.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah. We've all wondered that.
If you could cure that, you'd be a very rich woman.
Well, the interesting thing is I can't cure anything.
No, we can only do it ourselves.
You can do it yourselves. Yeah. But of course, it's finding out the ways.
Well, I look forward to finding out how...
Well, the Celestine Fourth Insight gives suggestions on how you understand this system.
Yeah.
And by understanding this system, you can find a solution.
So I believe this you're talking about the energy exchange or between two people in an interaction. And we're going to talk a bit about that, aren't we? Explain what that means.
Explain what the struggle for power means.
Yes, yeah.
The struggle for power... what it means is with normal discussion between two people,
yeah.
All right, just to start
the
off
normal
with,
setup.
A normal discussion between two people, there is very often a desire for somebody to have the last word.
I know that well.
I do too.
Yeah.
I know. So normal to have
you
the
mean
last
that's
word.
Unevolved behaviour?
Yeah.
Now you tell me.
Yes, I'm telling you. I'm trying to take over the conversation. So it's literally have the last word.
Yeah.
So I'm giving examples here. There's there's probably more examples, but
sure.
This is just to give an insight. Okay, to have the desire to have the last word, have the most successful part of the conversation, feel that you've been the most successful contribution. And then another one is getting recognition for your point of view, being seen as the person who's come up with the most interesting part of it or the most useful part of it.
And that's certainly true in sort of group discussions, isn't it, in a work situation or something?
Very, very much so. But what we need to take notice of here is somebody is trying to make their presence more important in some way.
So does that come at the cost of the other person in the interaction?
This is the point, and this is nearly all the time. Most of us do it, and we do it a lot, and that's quite
we
usual.
We do it unconsciously. We don't
I'd
even
say
think.
It was normal, but it's usual, I'd
yeah,
say.
Yeah.
It's usual, and we do it unconsciously, yeah. We do it unconsciously, but when we're in an emotional need to be something, that emotional need creates a process of drawing from the other person.
Yeah.
From drawing from the other person is actually drawing energy on a subtle level.
Right.
On a subtle level. So in fact, what we're doing, we're just trying to scoop some of the other person's energy.
Mm.
If we succeed in this endeavor, we will draw some of their energy and it will boost us a little bit.
Mm.
As odd as that sounds, but that is normal type of energy, but it doesn't have to be like that. In the process of raising your own energies, of going to a higher vibration, shall we call it?
Yeah.
This needs to change.
Okay.
You can't change
so that's
somebody
the principle
else, you can change
this,
yourself.
That's the principle of this teaching then.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
Absolutely. Okay. The next stage is where arguments are concerned.
Yeah.
So if I say that, you can start off with these normal discussions, but if somebody is needing to emphasize those, wanting to be the more successful part of the conversation, having their point of view, if that escalates, it goes into arguments usually. And the arguments are about a need to be in the right, to prove the other person wrong.
Tick.
I do it all the time. I didn't say that loudly, did I? To gain agreement with our own point of view.
Yeah.
We're gaining agreement. And that's drawing from somebody. Can you see that?
Okay.
And that escalates the differences or the difficulties that go on.
Mm.
For instance, I'll stay on that moment and say, when you are trying to draw that from somebody, the other person will start to get defensive.
Yeah.
So they're beginning to put a wall up or draw themselves back, shall I say.
Yeah.
Stay with us on this because it's going to make sense. So then the other one, it can go to a stage of needing to, I shall say politely, belittle the other person.
Yeah.
Of course, it can be more outrageous than that, but we're not too interested in going to those extremes. I leave that to the listener to think about within their own lives. Or to tell the other person they are in the wrong. Again, that can be more aggressive, that can be more insulting, all of these styles of communication that we've all used or we've all had done to us. All these things can escalate. I leave that with the listener to figure that one out within their own lives.
Okay.
This is all energy exchange.
Yeah.
If you can take it on board that it's all energy exchange, like I said, isn't it interesting? If you're trying to prove your point, if you're trying to do something relevant to the other person that might be belittling them, might be to gain an agreement on your point of view, and it's all about exchange of energy, you will find then it's trying to suck some of their own agreement or their energy from them. You are trying to, in a way, steal some energy, take energy to boost your own so that you feel successful in some way.
So would you say that's why if our listeners or ourselves are in that dynamic where the other person is drawing energy from us, albeit unconsciously, that's why after an exchange like that, we feel kind of wiped, don't we? We say, God,
you go
knackered.
Away feeling that you've not succeeded in overcoming in any way, you do feel
diminished.
Mm. There is a strange feeling and often an irritation.
So that is because our energy level has obviously
you've dropped
reduced.
Your energy because, this has happened. It's called a struggle for power, and it does always escalate to trouble if it isn't stopped.
Ultimately, violence, I guess.
Oh, it can go to violence. Mm. That's how it can escalate, and this is the problem. The person who feels diminished will hold themselves back. Or we'll put up a barrier, and that irritates the person who's trying
to take
over.
They're looking for the response.
Well, and what people don't realise is subconsciously, unconsciously, they're looking for the energy.
Right.
It's the energy that gives you the feeling of empowerment or power. The lack of it gives you a feeling of irritation and dissatisfaction.
It sounds to me, Heather, what you're describing in essence is the characteristics of passive-aggressive behaviour, which, you know, we try not to fall into, but which really are quite common, aren't they, in modern society, really? I mean, we're trying to evolve and move on from that, but still they do seem to be quite prevalent. That's how we try and, you know, we switch between passiveness and aggressiveness in order to try and get some, you know, energy back, I guess.
And it is. It is really on that level. Because remember, everything's energy.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's energy. So if we can switch our attention to everything's energy, you can see it. Begin to see it for sure. So what if, I'm just going to say the sort of struggles for power there are, that we can be talking about a couple relationship.
Sure. So they play out in different arenas.
And so imagine two people mm-hmm. have suddenly met and it works between them.
It's delightful, yes.
So we're talking about couples and heterosexual, homosexual, it doesn't matter, gays, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
But two people come together that haven't met prior to that, and they come together and somehow or other it hits off. What happens?
Well,
you describe it to me because you can see it, can't you?
The delightful thing about that, what's characteristic of that is someone is giving you all this energy for nothing. Like they're, and another way of putting it in a more parochial way is they are giving you attention, aren't they? They're focusing their attention, and largely at the beginning of
which
a relationship,
they're giving energy,
really, and it's in a non-judgmental way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those little annoying things about you, oh, so cute, he did that, so cute, she did that, those little annoying things that later on, as we know, become a problem. Initially, we feel accepted, don't we?
Yes.
All our faults.
We feel
someone's
accepted.
Powering energy into us.
We feel important. Now, that is an important point, and hang on to it. Bring me back to it in case I forget.
Okay. Yes.
That's the important point. When we're given that, we're given that. You know, when we have any of you that have had a cat that absolutely adored and adored you, or a dog that you've, adored or adored you, you get that same energy from
absolutely.
them. They give you the feeling of that you're wonderful. Mm. You're absolutely wonderful.
Why do we
wonderful.
Love dogs? Because, I mean, dogs essentially are just devoid of ego, aren't they? They're just so loving and accepting, and that in essence, when you first meet someone, we have that experience.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just the most wonderful feeling. It lifts you.
Mm.
You know, you feel you can conquer the world.
Yeah.
Now, bring me back to that, because that's the important point of the fourth insight.
Okay.
We absolutely feel great. Now, what happens when there starts to be a disagreement?
Problems.
So, like, there's a disagreement. We're not into rows or arguments at this point. What happens with that couple when they have a disagreement?
Well, the first thing that would happen there maybe would begin to withdraw slightly from one another. So
one might just back off. So if you imagine, do you know the most incredible, if you see some pictures that some people have illustrated of showing what happens when two people come together that haven't met before and they click and it becomes a romance situation, you get the first one person with their huge aura around them, you get the second person with their huge aura around them, and when they come close together and their auras merge, you get a heart shaped.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Incredible.
That's exactly what happens. For those who've got the sight to see, that's what they see.
So those are the vegans that can see that with their purified diets.
You sound like you're mocking them. That's unkind. Now you're withdrawing energy. but people that can see, which I suspect if you went on to develop your skill, this is what you could, you might get a glimpse of that at some point with your skill, because I do believe you have to have a leaning or you have to be birthed to a leaning towards things like seeing aura or those types of subtle energies, because it's a very hard thing for most people to see.
So what happens, Heather? You've explained what happens when two people connect energetically. Mm.
So imagine these two people near each other with this, their auras, and they're merged so that their auras look like, to get together, are like a heart shape. What happens when one of them starts to diminish their energy system, their energy offering?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when one, you see a collapse of the heart shape begin?
Really?
Well, yes, because one's energy will start to pull away.
Sure, yeah.
Or somebody will put up a barrier, so it become, and then the one that's still giving that wonderful love feels, ooh, something's changed and it doesn't feel so good, so they pull away. So the energy exchange begins to lessen.
Well, what's the phrase you often hear? He's changed.
He's changed.
She's changed.
She's changed.
I can't love him
Not
anymore.
Not the same person.
I can't love her anymore. I can't. You're a different person. I can't love him or her anymore.
Yeah.
You're just explaining it in an energetic way.
And so that's what we do by withdrawing that energy, that unadulterated, unconditional, pure energy giving. you find that they start to have a completely different approach, and the problems begin.
So, question for you: you've become a relationship expert. We'll have to do we'll have to do the male and female energy in future episodes. So, in order to have a healthy, shall we say, romantic relationship, because that's what we're talking about, we'll go on to talk about other aspects of relationships in a moment. Really, as an individual, you need to be kind of like a whole when you join this union with another person. So you need to be connecting to source energy when you're entering a relationship. So when the natural, you know, pulling away that happens, as in any relationship, that's a natural part, isn't it? You're still filling up with source energy. Is that
what... Well, all right, source energy. I'm not sure that we've explained that yet, so I'll explain that now.
Yeah, please. I felt that we didn't explain that well enough before. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that
a bit
as well.
Woo-woo, so, I think.
Source energy. It's very, very hard to find titles, labels for such energies without sounding a bit, you know, oh, here we are, New Age again.
Sure.
It's very hard. So I'm sorry, we'll have to go for these titles and hope people move with us on it. So we've talked about the health of the body.
Yeah.
We've talked about like the type of exercise, the type of exercises that you can do.
Yeah.
The food, nutrition, the balances, you know, the meditation, everything. That is one area of working upon. We've talked about concentrating on seeing energies.
Yeah.
So being more sensitive to them. Mm. I don't think we fully explained that the next stage to do would be by using the breath, draw in universal energy. Mm. Now, all right, that does sound a bit woo-woo, but you need to practice it, and practice it over a period of time to find the difference.
Can I interject at this point?
Sure.
So for our listeners who are more sciencey, shall we say,
yes,
coming from less fluffy spiritual, sort of the phrase that some phrases that have come to my mind in terms of, well, where is the, you know, the source of energy? Where does it come from? So you've got things like the morphogenic field, which is what Rupert Sheldrake talks about.
Yeah.
That's the source.
Absolutely.
You've got the ultra soup, which is this idea that the energy field is almost like this moving plenum, if you like, a membrane.
Yeah.
You've also got, it's just known also as the field or the universal field. So these are more sort of kind of sciencey terms that might give our listener an idea of the source of energy. Does that make any sense?
There's a phrase of the collective consciousness.
Collective consciousness.
As well, definitely.
Yeah.
But I will also add that some people might call it God.
Yeah, the Godhead.
Or the Godhead.
Yeah.
The Goddess, some people
goddess,
will call it.
Course.
So there's a whole range of things that, so it's in the eye of the beholder again.
Sure, yeah.
It just depends what you think it is. It's that's it.
And also what we haven't discussed is, you know, what the organized religions, they would all have different names for it as well.
Yes, of course. And so, if you look at ancient Egyptian, there's words for that. I don't think it's Ka, is it Ba? I think it's Ba.
Yeah.
And key energy, energies from various ancient societies all around the world. So there's a whatever anybody understands it is, that is absolutely fine, because remember, everything's energy. And remember, we are energy. We're molecules and
molecules.
And we're water, but we're also atom particles, and in between the atom particles are masses of spaces. It's all energy. So if you understand that, then to sit down and maybe do a meditation, a concentration, I would suggest to do it. You can do it simply, or stand under a tree and do it, but not in a lightning storm. Preferably in the sunshine. But stand under a tree to do it, stand on a hill and do it, stand in an ancient sacred forest, or in a stone circle, or in your favourite place somewhere, or in your sitting room, in your kitchen.
Without meaning to sound crass. And before you do that, obviously, what you do need to reach is just a sense of peace and inner stillness. I hate, I'm going to use the M word here. I know you might throw something at me. Mindfulness, to be
It's doing a lot of good absolutely everywhere. But I remember mindfulness being part of yoga once upon a time. But it seems to have gone and taking out its own energy from now on. So, you know, for me, it's still like from yoga or Buddhism practices rather than a thing on its own. But mindfulness would be another way of sitting.
Just to tell our listeners, I got away without a kick as well.
I only beat him up occasionally, I promise you. Only when I think he deserves it. Not that I'm withdrawing energy, I have to tell you.
You do it consciously, of course.
Yes. Mm. Anyway, I'm thrown now. Mm. I'm actually thrown. Energy. So it's drawing universal energy into you. Now, when I take a group to draw it in, always with the breath. The breath really is the breath of life. And the breath acts like bellows within your whole system. So you're breathing in and breathing out. And I would recommend in the yoga way to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. In through the nose, out through the mouth, and do it slowly. And as you do, visualize you drawing energy down from wherever. And you can be doing it as a prayer if you wish to, a prayer or a mantra, or just imagery. You can have music going on behind you or silence, but draw it in and see it coming down through the center of the top of your head. Drawing the silver energy, and it can be white energy. With some people, it's purple or blue. I'll just say to listeners, I think you can hear a cat mooting around here somewhere.
Our little friend Rosie.
Our little friend Rosie, yes, she wants our energy. And you draw it in through the top of your head and keep breathing it in like bellows.
Yeah.
And filling up in your imagination your whole body with it. And when your whole body is filled up with it, imagine it going beyond there, beyond your skin, into your aura system, and then expanding your aura system as large as you want to, above and below, front, back, sides, and expand it. So then filling up with your energy and doing it regularly. And then when you're with people, when you're in conversation with people, think of giving that energy to them, sharing that energy with them without any holding back, knowing that you can be filling as you're going on, and so, everyone can do
that. So when you say sharing energy, what brings to my mind is one of the main principles of counselling, which is the idea of unconditional positive regard, whereby what you're actually doing is when you listen. When you're in an interaction with someone, you don't think about the point that you want to make. You actually listen without prejudice, or you listen without judgment, and you just sit in that space, not formulating, as hard as it is for us Gemini types not to do it, not formulating in your own head your response. You're actually listening to that person without judgment. Is that one way in which we could give, you know, our energy to someone consciously in an interaction? Is that right?
Yeah, totally. The prophecy here teaches to literally give full attention to the person when they're communicating with you. As unbiased as you can. As unbiased as you can.
Because normally we're champing at the bit.
And I heard this the other day. We don't usually listen to listen. We usually listen to speak our own point of view. So while the person's talking to us, we're overriding in our minds what they're saying because we're champing a bit to say what we want to say. And that's like the dominance thing we were talking about.
Or how it's relevant to our lives, whatever it
is. That's right. And that is dominating bit. So to truly listen. And it is a counselling technique to learn, without any doubt. But it is an ability to learn. It is an ability to learn to share mm-hmm. and share equally mm-hmm. with everybody else energies. And there is a good reason for this that I'm coming to,
please,
which I'm trying to keep my mind on.
Yes, you're doing right well. On forget. I'm impressed. We're covering a lot of ground.
That's only because I kicked you.
We're covering a lot of ground in this episode.
So. We are, yes. Yeah. So we're trying to make sure we keep all the points in this, that we can. Yeah. When we're giving this energy to a person,
yeah.
When we're giving this energy to a person, what happens to them is they feel boosted.
Yeah.
They feel enthusiastic.
Empowered.
They feel, because they feel heard on a psychological level, but unconsciously they're energized.
Yeah.
Being energized means that you're just pumping up their energy, but on a psychological and emotional level, they feel understood. They feel validated. Mm. I think is a good word. The person will feel validated.
That's an important phrase, because actually, when we go into, as human beings, when we go into any interaction, whether it's with, you know, an acquaintance like the postman or the milkman when they did exist. You know, or,
you're old.
Or, I am, yeah. I'm
you're
showing
old,
my age
getting
now.
Old, mate.
Or, you know, when it's when we chat with our family or friends or acquaintances or work colleagues, we want to feel validated in that exchange, in that interaction.
Yeah,
that's
we
key.
Do, and we all do.
Even if it's just a small way. Even
now
small
we can't account for somebody else doing it or not doing it with us, but we can take responsibility for ourselves, and we can do it. And remember, there is no lack of energy for you to fill up and pass on with, so you don't need to restrain or limit. Restraints or limits then start the problems. Mm. Restraint. Now, what I want to say that I'm going to jump to, if you don't mind, because I'm worried I might forget to put this point across, because it is the important point. The important point is it's not about just couples.
No.
It's also about groups, but take it, and this is the example that's given at some point in the Celestine Prophecy books.
Yeah, and of course we'll reiterate, please do go and read the books.
Yes, please read the books, because we do jump ahead with ourselves sometimes as well, but you'll get the whole significance throughout the whole books. But what imagine a group of people, and somebody has got to come up with a decision to be made,
so
a solution for a problem.
Like a work scenario.
Well, it can be any sort of setup, but so there's got to be a decision. There's got to be some. And it's possible for the whole group to pump up with all that energy and pass that energy to one person collectively. They will pass it to one person in the group. So everybody concentrates on that one person in that group. That one person will come up with a solution.
Right.
Because they have pumped all that energy, and that person now is operating on a much higher vibration.
So,
much clearer minded, much more connected.
So the insight's more likely to come to
with
them.
Source or with God
yeah.
or with the angels or whatever you want to call it.
Mm.
And they are able to draw in a manifestation way the answer that's needed. Very much no. So that is the group working for the better of the whole.
Oh, wow, that would be a very evolved thing to go out and teach in offices, wouldn't it? Could they come out to all sorts of solutions?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it happening in a couple situation, wouldn't that be marvellous?
It
now,
would.
I'm going to go to the part that we talked about earlier, was that even in a situation where you're giving rather than taking, giving rather than taking, if both people are doing it, they're both receiving, they're both giving and receiving. But in a couple situation where there is giving going on, it doesn't mean then what you're doing is agreeing with totally the other person's point of view.
Or you're not being overly passive or weak.
That's the point, yes. Remember we talked about that, didn't we?
Because some people might come to the conclusion, oh, does that mean I go into every interaction and I just, you know, I diminish my perspective or my point, and I just, you know, constantly sort of give in to the other person. It's not about being that, because that's giving your power away, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we're trying to be sure that you understand that when you have a different point of view, it doesn't need to be an argument.
No.
You can give energy to the other person,
sure,
so that their point of view can change, their point of view can be truly who they are, their point of view can be what they are, and that they will feel that it's okay that you have a different point of view. That is possible. That is very possible with giving, and it stops the division.
So you both honour your point of view, if you like.
Giving energy this way enables the process of developed honouring of each other's points of view.
That sounds like the complete opposite as politics as we know it. That's
well, that's the next interesting point, isn't it? You and I think have identified the areas where the lack of this giving, where this retreating, this chasm
that
grows.
The embodiment of the power struggle is the realm of politics.
Politics. Well, we identified economics.
Yeah.
In economics, well, look at it in stocks and shares.
Or when you have financial crashes, what do people do? They withdraw their energy in terms of they pull their money, their investment out of the system. They, you know. And what happens? You have a collapse.
Everything.
We won't go into the conspiratorial controlled element of that.
No, we won't.
Again, that's for another day.
But
in essence,
another show.
It is investors pulling their energy out of the markets.
Because it's energy.
It's energy.
It's not even when they're doing that hard cash energy. In solid form. It literally is numbers in some ethereal place,
exactly,
isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But it's energy. And yes, it's withdrawn. And then organisations will do it.
Groups, social groups.
So you've got the workplace and families.
Of course, the example is from a family when he's up in the mountains in Chile, when the child is being shouted at, I think, by her dad. And there's this row that goes on. So
in the book, folks,
yeah,
read
please,
it in the book. You'll see the example.
It's a very good example.
It's a very good example, yes. Yeah. Where the young girl has to learn not to... I think the learning is to give.
Yeah.
Is to give energy to the father.
Sure.
And the pattern of behaviour changes as a result. Rather than the child feel diminished... and withdrawn because the verbal abuse continues and actually escalates.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas to send energy, where the child's sending back energy to the father then started to change the behaviour.
That's right.
Not that you can change anybody else, but this is this is also in prayer form that this is... are possible to say prayers in relation to a difficulty between human beings. And I think this is what you're doing. You're actually giving energy. But it's a different way of seeing it. So what else did we come out with? Politics. So we've said it all, I think, haven't we? Commerce, couples and families. So you can see how things can change if we began to change. So the more people change, the more... So the whole of society changes.
Yeah, can I just add...
And it's the tipping point. It's getting to what... In the book, they call it critical mass.
Critical mass, yeah.
Critical mass of change. That's what we're looking for.
Just in terms of politics, just to extend that point a wee bit, if you think of it, one of the reasons I believe why people are so turned off politics is that they know that debates are just so futile, and it's all you get. We're in the midst of the UK election here, so politics is kind of on our minds, not that we're both following it particularly closely, but all it is it's about point scoring. It's about diminishing the other. It's about taking, you know, the energy from your political opponent, isn't it? So there's no sense of an evolving process in political exchanges, are there? It's about winning the argument, diminishing your opponent. And I think, as I said just a moment ago, I think that's why so many people are turned off politics, because they know that just doesn't work. We have to move towards a system, I think, where we form a political system based on conciliation, based where we look for points of similarity.
Yeah.
And I think Sound like I'm getting on my hobby horse here. I think that will be when we move beyond party politics, because at the moment people have to toe the party line. Individual candidates have to toe the party line. So there might be a point where actually they're not in agreement with their party, but they have to hold it anyway. So yes. I don't think we're going to see a more evolved development of politics until the political system collapses. And again, plug for a past episode. If you listen to our episode called Neopolitics, we discuss at greater length how a new politics might come into being and what it might look like. So that might be an episode you might want to go and listen to.
Yes, I think that's a very good idea. Interesting, I think, if you've been born and bred in this form of politics, it's very hard to perceive
of anything else.
Of a different type Absolutely. Of politics.
Great point.
And we've heard from history other types of political systems that have all been rubbished by us Westerners anyway, or shall I say our tuition background, I think. But it's very hard to think of a system that we haven't had already and we don't have already that would be very different. And that is an interesting one. So, yes, thank you.
That's a good point that you make, because at the moment it's almost like if you're disgruntled with politics, your local candidates, there's no other way. There's no other way, is there?
There's no redress from that, no.
And that's where I think people's frustration, because they land up just voting for the least worst candidate. And that's not a very good form of democracy, is it?
Yes. No.
Not a very evolved form.
No. Again, changes and improvements only come from revolutions. And maybe this needs a revolution.
Consciousness.
Can you possibly imagine the different parties giving energy to each other to help improve the running of the country?
No. Can you imagine how the mainstream media would cover it?
Well, would they give energy to the politicians help the politicians?
No, because all they do is take. They look for divisions.
Well, this is what's interesting. This is when you see that, this is what's so important about understanding the Celestine prophecies, the insights, is to understand that it brings you this other concept. You don't quite know how maybe it would look, but realizing another concept is essential for changes and improvements in the world.
Yeah.
So, and remember, this does escalate. So I'm sure everybody's picked up on that by now, that these divisions goes to countries and wars.
Yeah.
This is where wars come from.
Yeah.
It comes from these big divisions and this need to prevent somebody overpowering you or to take power of some sort. And, of course, the power is an energy source, but it looks differently when it's actually in solid form. But this is what happens.
So I think we'll look to round up our episode on the third and fourth insight, Heather.
Yes, and I hope that has had a great... I will help our listeners to have a great look into the third and fourth. I know I've heard some people say they've read it and they didn't really get hold of the whole meanings, and of course what we're doing, Ant, you and I, is seeing if we can elaborate upon it through our own experience as well and the teachings of it, so that maybe people can really grasp. Everybody that's listening can grasp the absolute use, and how it can play in everybody's life.
I mean, that's why we're serialising the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy. You know, not because it's a favourite hobby horse of ours, but because we are, you know, we're convinced that the teachings contained within it can help so many people.
So many people, and it is my understanding of. Shall we say, a level of beings that's not inhuman, but they are in another vibration, and they're what we call the overseers. Mm-hmm. The overseers are groups of people, and some of our listeners may have come across them through mediums.
Yeah.
When mediums are in communication, particularly trance mediums, with the overseers, they will always have one of the group representing the whole.
Right.
And the one group always says we,
right,
never I.
Sure.
They are another stage of evolution beyond, whereby they know, they begin to lose their identity, and they support each other. And for me, the Celestine is teaching, which is what we've been talking about today, how to become conscious that we all need to support each other and
move
forward and evolve through and to make a difference here on earth for a reason. And this is everything that we've been talking about today in the third and the fourth.
Thank you.
Is that grouping and understanding that it's about evolving to be in groups rather than the ego and the I.
And the individual. That's a really nice summary. Thank you. So in our next episode on the serialization of the Celestine teachings, Celestine prophecy, we will be covering the fifth and
sixth
insight, get my words out,
and a little insight
just briefly to give our listeners
the mystical experience.
Okay, sounds interesting.
So that would be the next stage. If you passed yourself in your experience of
your
life,
through the progression,
first, second, third and fourth, you'd have to practice them and go through them and begin to develop them within yourself. Then you would be ready to begin the fifth, which is to have a mystical experience.
Right.
Until you've gone through those first four, the mystical experience...
It's going to be a bit elusive.
Good phrase. That's exactly it.
Go to the jungle and take some of your favourite substance.
Ayahuasca. It is possible to do that. But, you know, for some people, they don't even get it because they're not at that stage, with the ayahuasca.
So they might think they're going to get it, but...
I know, there's a popular Western understanding that you don't need to go through any stages, you just take the ayahuasca. But it doesn't work like that for everybody, interestingly enough. Anyway, the sixth is human evolution through a synergy of parental legacy.
Ooh,
oh, my God. Oh, this one's really interesting.
Right.
Sounds a little bit boring in comparison with the mystical experience, but in fact it's gobsmacking when it really starts to bring you to an understanding of who and what you are. That's what that does. I mean, it was an absolute revelation for myself, and I think I've actually put you into some of that understanding,
because as a culture, just quickly, we're so quick to dismiss the role that our parents play in our lives and their legacy. You know, we get to 21 adults and it's like, well, my parents are a bit embarrassed, you know.
But I'm going to cut you off a bit and not give away what's coming up. But to know, wasn't it an amazing when you find out that it's everything to do with who you're becoming, and probably different than maybe our listeners realise. Very, very interesting.
Thank you for that, Heather. Please tune in for it.
Just
to remind our listeners, we welcome your involvement in the show. So if you have any ideas, if you have any comments, good, bad, indifferent, please do visit our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page. You can message us on there. I've also created a Discerning Consciousness Facebook group. I've worked out how to do it. So if you're a member there, you can add any contributions that that you like, and maybe ideas for future shows, or please do add posts there. Welcome that by all means. Thank you for listening, everyone. It's been a fascinating exploration of the third and fourth insight. Thank you for bringing your knowledge of the Celestine prophecies, Heather.
And thank you for bringing your knowledge alongside as well, for your background knowledge that I don't have.
Thank you very much. So we look forward to you joining us all soon. And we're signing off now. So it's bye from me, Ant-Man.
And bye from me too.